Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 26th of July 2012. Welcome to another show. My name's Herewood Fenton. I'm very pleased to be able to bring you this show. We broadcast across the US on a number of FM networks, and we're also broadcasting around the world through our live feed. And you can access our live feed during the show at any time, just simply by going to truthnews.com.au and following the link that says listen, and listen to the live stream. There's a link there on the main page, and you can get straight into that. Of course, if you are listening now, you don't need that information, but if you're getting this via podcast, you may want to organize it so next time you can listen live. And if you do listen live, you can actually call us. We have call-in numbers for people in Australia and the US, and those numbers are 1-300-153-372 if you're in Australia, and if you're in the US, it's 512-646-1984. So Truth News Australia brings to you today a range of important and somewhat obscured topics from the world that affects us all, and in subject areas that tend to be the victims of media manipulation and obfuscation. In the second hour of the show today, I have Bronwyn Hancock, who is an activist in relation to health freedom and specifically vaccines. We've been doing a series on this show for the last few weeks on questions of health and vaccines. And we had on the show last week Meryl Dorey, who runs an organization called the Australian Vaccination Network. And today we're having Bronwyn Hancock, and she is based in Sydney, Australia. And she also is very, very active and has a large influence here helping people to largely circumvent problems to do with the legal system. She spends a lot of time in court with people who are the subject of family court wrangles. Quite often, one parent wants their child to be vaccinated and the other does not. And sadly, because of people's inability to resolve their, their interpersonal problems in a normal, civilized way, in many, many cases, this ends up in the family court. And we have a judge basically being forced to decide whether or not a child gets the jab or not. So Bronwyn will be coming on to talk about her experiences. She probably won't be able to talk about specific cases because, of course, they're sub judice, but she'll be able to talk about the general state of affairs with the legalities of people getting vaccines or not getting vaccines, and specifically children, because children is the really contentious area. Your parents feel that it is their responsibility and their right to decide how to give health treatments, medicines to their children. The state quite often says, well, we have to override, because many parents do neglect their children. Many parents may have wrong ideas, and we can't allow parents to simply make all these decisions. But what we want to do in this show is simply initially look at the current state of the laws to see what your rights are, to see what the rights of the government are, and to see how the family courts typically deal with these types of questions. But of course, in addition to that, what we need to look at is the way in which the media portrays all this. And of course, the media being very much in the grip of the influence of global cartels, which control healthcare and have immense influence, the media portrays these stories in a way almost always to make it look as if A, the state has more powers over individuals than it really does. B, to make it look like the anti-vaccine or the health freedom people are some kind of fringe group of sort of loonies who don't really represent the body of the population, that they are somehow some sort of weird minority who probably should be suppressed. And that is generally the impression you get when you read the headlines of stories. And I've got a few headlines that I actually want to run through with you. So we'll be going through all of that with Bronwyn in the second hour. And in the second half hour of the first hour of today's show, I will have George Georges back on, and he'll be running through some of his recent research, the history of tasers and peak oil, and some new, I guess, information that he's gleaned from the intelligence community, of which George sort of plows through and gets a lot of information from. He's got a good, diverse source of knowledge there. So actually, let me now just move into one of these stories in relation to vaccines, which I think is extremely indicative of the way in which the media gives you a twisted picture of what is really going on. Title of the story here from The Telegraph. Doctors unite to smash the anti-vaccine group. I mean, right away, wow, that's, that, you know, smash the end. That's an incredibly charged, loaded word. And it really indicates that that just by reading the headline, you would assume, well, doctors are good people, right? If doctors are smashing something, it must mean that whatever they're smashing is bad, right? I mean, what do we smash? We smash things that are bad. We smash the opposition. You know, we destroy diseases. That's one of the things that doctors are meant to do. They're meant to actually, you know, smash diseases, cure you. So here we have a headline that says, "Doctors are uniting to smash the anti-vaccine group." And this is from The Telegraph in Australia, in Sydney. It's a Sydney newspaper from the 22nd of July 2012. The state's top doctors have launched an attack on an anti-vaccination group, accusing it of misleading parents. Their new campaign aims to make the Australian Vaccination Network change its name, which one well-known specialist branded a complete misnomer. New South Wales Health Minister Gillian Skinner and Fair Trading Minister Anthony Roberts have been urged to force the change on the New South Wales registered group in a letter signed by Associate Professor of La Trobe University, Dr. Ken Harvey. His call is backed by experts from the Australian Medical Association and the University of Sydney. Of course, last week we were talking to Meryl Dorey, who runs the AVN, and we didn't bring this story up. This is actually more recent. In fact, you know, this is really only from 3 or 4 days ago. But we were talking in the last show how she has been the subject of an ongoing wave after wave of attacks. And no matter what she does, she can never feel comfortable. She can never feel safe because they'll come at her from some other direction. And lo and behold, here we see this new emergence of another underhanded attack. And again, this one is completely deceitful, because it is actually, you cannot do this, okay? I mean, again, they give the impression that they have powers that they do not really have. And this is something that I will be raising with Bronwyn in the second hour. But we see it again and again, this color of law approach, where they assume, and they make the general public assume, that they have the ability to force an organization to change its name. Now, they don't have those powers, as far as I know. We'll be getting George Georges on, and I'll question him on this as well, but I'm pretty sure that they do not have the power. Now, there are conditions under which a business can be forced to change its registered name. That is if a trademark has already been registered for that business name. And that does happen from time to time, but it's the subject of litigation and it's a civil matter. And if your business name has been trademarked in a given country and another business uses that, then of course you can be subject to litigation. But what we're talking here is not that type of arrangement. We're actually talking here about really, really unsubstantiated rumors that some people are saying they would like this to happen. That is a million miles from saying, A, it's legal, or B, it's going to happen. And yet we read the title of the story and it says, "Doctors unite to smash the anti-vaccine group." So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, this is just a fresh story straight off the press from the last couple of days. This is ongoing. This type of manipulation of real information to put spin on it, to make you think something else is going on, is the main bread and butter of what the media is all about. Now, I will just actually continue reading a little more from this story because it is important. I don't think that they will be able to do it, but they will be able to create such a furore over it that it will have an effect and it will make Meryl Dorey's life more difficult and it will confuse a lot of people. So the New South Wales Health Minister, Gillian Skinner, and the Fair Trading Minister, Anthony Roberts, have been urged to force the change on the New South Wales Registered Group. Now, and his call is backed by experts from the Australian Medical Association and the University of Sydney. And it's the article is going on to say here that the AVN claims to be pro-choice, but it has been criticised for putting out misleading information based on conspiracy theories. Well, folks, that's what we call free speech. Yes, it may be misleading, and I'm not even here to say that the AVN is right and the government is wrong. No, I'm talking about a free speech question. And they've named their website the Australian Vaccination Network, and again, that is their right to do that. It is not a medical body. They are not giving out medical advice. Therefore, you cannot simply tell them what the name of their organisation must be. That is totalitarianism. But again, some people think that that would be a reasonable thing to do, just force people to basically, I guess, change their identities to match what we think they should be projecting in an organisational sense. Dr. Brian Owler of the Australian Medical Association said, "I think this name is deceptive and misleading. People think that they are getting information that is objective on vaccination when it is against vaccination. It is very disingenuous." Well, even if that were true, you know, even if what he was saying were true, that it is not objective and disingenuous, again, it is their right to say these things and it is their right to choose the name that they wish. Since the introduction of childhood immunisation in the 1930s, vaccine-preventable diseases have declined by more than 99%. Now, that's just a little statement injected into the article, again, to make you feel totally comfortable that these people are lunatics and their opinion must be completely disregarded and they must be smashed. Smashed. Remember the wording, smashed. We're not talking about anything that is actually reasonable, anything that is actually legal. We're talking about violence. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Hereward Fenton. We'll be right back after the break. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm just going through a story here in relation to the way in which vaccines are being... let me rephrase that. A story in regard to the way in which those who question vaccines are being opposed, suppressed and repressed within our society. And we just quoted there at the end of the last segment from the article in which they said, since the introduction of childhood immunisation in the 1930s, vaccination-preventable diseases have declined by more than 99%. Now, I want to deconstruct that because this is actually one of the central pillars of the way in which the pro-vaccine propaganda is framed. It is certainly true that many diseases have declined by more than 99%. And the decline actually well precedes the 1930s. The decline goes back to the 19th century. In fact, throughout the 19th century, even disease rates were declining. And we can directly correlate the decline in all types of infectious diseases with several changes in society, one of them being improvements to nutrition. Of course, you know, good nutrition is essential to a healthy immune system. And as we started to get better trade, more foods coming in, especially to countries in the northern hemisphere that typically had quite limited diets, you had people getting much better nutrition. A second key factor was living conditions. Now, another really strong contributor to disease epidemics is overcrowded living conditions, and this was very common in the crowded cities in Europe, where you had a rural population and you had a city population that was very, very concentrated, very densely populated. And that density of population with lots of people living together in small buildings, of course, allows people to transmit disease more quickly. And then a corollary to that, of course, is sanitation. Because when you have dense populations and poor sanitation, that is actually a recipe for disaster. That is a recipe for creating disease epidemics. So two things happened during the 20th century. There was radical improvements to sanitation. We had sewage systems. We had all kinds of ways of making people's hygiene improve. And we had less crowded living conditions. And an interesting point to note is that the Spanish flu epidemic of 1917 actually occurred at a time when people's living conditions were quite bad, and when there was a lot of overcrowding, and there were also a lot of food shortages due to the First World War. And there's been some interesting research done on that I've looked into that shows that there is a correlation there between what was happening in the society in terms of people's living conditions and the onset of the Spanish flu. Of course, that is always now used as an archetype of what we must avoid through public health programs, through immunization programs. And everyone's, quite rightly terrified that something like that could happen again. It is a terrifying thought. However, those who take a what may be called a natural hygiene approach to health have said, and this goes back generations, has said that the main things we need to focus on in order to keep people healthy and strong is keep their nutrition up and keep them clean, keep them living in good living conditions, and obviously working conditions are very important as well. Basically, your overall state of the quality of your life is very important. It's not really that surprising, is it? It's a bit of a no-brainer. But the propaganda that we get through the media and through the government mouthpieces of public health is just continually drumming this one message about how you got to get your shots. And it really isn't actually paying much attention to all of those other really, really key factors. I mean, we get some statements from the government about how we've got to deal with obesity, but obesity is just one aspect of poor nutrition. I mean, good nutrition involves a whole lot of other things, and there is very little money, effort, or time put into promoting the importance of good nutrition. But conversely, there is a fantastic amount of time and effort put into telling people about their shots, money poured into it. And of course, the money that's poured into that comes out of our taxes, because in Australia, we have a universal healthcare system. And what that means is about 3% of your income is deducted on top of your income tax. This is in addition to your income tax. And it is a levy on top of that, and it becomes quite significant. We are paying for the government's vaccine programs. We are all paying for it. And the beneficiary of all that money, of course, is GlaxoSmithKline, Pfizer, Bayer, massively powerful global corporations that all act in accordance with each other. That's why it is quite correct to call them cartels. They work together to price fix. They work together to block out and lock out any other type of competitor which might reduce their market advantage. And of course, natural healthcare products, like we've seen, like the black salve that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, homeopathic remedies, or even just promoting the importance of nutrition and saying, look, you know, let's get nutrition right, and let's not worry too much about vaccines. Well, they're not going to accept that. That's actually going to affect their bottom line. So they're going to do whatever they can to prevent that sort of information from getting out. And so we have here, just getting back to the article that I was referring to earlier, we have doctors who, you know, a large percentage of them are getting generous endowments from the large pharmaceuticals. And as we've seen with GlaxoSmithKline, in the US, there were at least 50,000 doctors who were getting regular speaking fees. And this was just in relation to one drug. We're only talking here about Paxil. We're talking here about doctors. I think maybe it was two drugs, Paxil and Wellbutrin. But we're just talking here about a couple of drugs. And there were 50,000 doctors that were getting all these generous payments from the pharmaceuticals just to go on little speaking trips promoting this one drug. So when you think of the thousands of medications and vaccines and all the other things that these companies are producing, I'd say it would be very hard to find one single doctor who isn't getting some benefit from some pharmaceutical for promoting something. I think that they all are. So here we have Dr. Karen Phelps, GP and adjunct public health professor at Sydney University. Now, that sounds very suspect to me. And, you know, he's saying we have the first world luxury of not seeing so many diseases, but it's only because in Australia we have such high levels of immunization. Well, that's like a PR statement. You know, that's like a little bit of advertising, a little bit of free advertising. And of course, for saying that sort of thing, Dr. Karen Phelps is no doubt got a fantastic job. I mean, public health professor at the University of Sydney. I mean, I'd love to know what kind of salary Karen Phelps, I don't know whether that's a man or a woman. I'm assuming it's a woman. I'd love to know what kind of salary Dr. Karen Phelps is on. I'd imagine it's probably at least 300. I mean, who knows? It's probably more than that. I'm probably being naive in saying 300,000. I mean, these people get a lot of money. Anyway, writing to the government, Dr. Harvey said the association is registered with the Office of Fair Trading. This is the Australian Vaccination Network who they are attacking. And the government has the power to order a name change. The deceptive name of the organisation has potentially deadly consequences. Now, the head of the AVN, Meryl Dorey, who was on this show just last week, said she would not be considering a name change for the association. It is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard in my life. And good on you, Meryl, I agree. It is utterly ridiculous. She says here, what is the problem with our name? We are Australian, we are about vaccination, and we are a network. We are not anti-vaccination, we are about choice. Well, you know, this little story I've presented to you is like a nutshell. It encapsulates what has gone wrong with our society, what has gone wrong with our civilization. And it really is a great shame and great tragedy to see what was once, I believe, a great civilization in some ways. I do believe science has achieved great things. I do believe in science. But to see it all become diluted and prostituted for business and capitalistic exploitation is really, really sad. With Truth News Radio Australia, back after the break with George Georges.
Selfish. punchline, left the punchline, leaving us so, leaving us so.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 26th of July 2012. My name's Hereward Fenton. It's great to be talking to you today. And if you'd like to call in, if you've got a few questions, if you're interested in this vaccine topic, the numbers you can call are, if you're in Australia, 1300 153 372, and if you're in the US, 512 646 1984. I have in studio for the next half hour our regular commentator, George Georges. George, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Hereward.
Now, George, do you have any comments on the story there that I was reading out in the previous section about the attempt to smash the anti-vaccine groups in Australia and the attempt by the Minister for Fair Trading, allied with some doctors who are obviously in the pay of Big Pharma, to force Meryl Dorey to change the name of her organisation? What's your take on that?
All right, I might just make some legal points here. The minister is able to order a name change. That's first thing. The name on the website can remain as it is. They're arguing about the name that the organisation is using in Australia. It's a thin edge of a wedge concerning a charitable status that this organisation has, and they're heading towards a deregistration. What I would suggest was that they probably flow with the name change but leave the website intact in order to maintain the charitable registration in Australia. Now, the minister is able to order a name change for whatever reason they purport. If they don't give a reason, there are two areas of appeal. If they do give a reason, then you go in against that particular reason. Now, the two areas of appeal are through the Supreme Court and through the Administrative Appeals Tribunal in Australia. Both those would create some activity for the vaccination network, and I think that they would probably come out of that with some reasonable success. So it is a complicated matter. They should challenge. There are two areas legally that they can take. This reminds me, if I can just diverse just for
Absolutely.
A few seconds. Okay, this reminds me of the David Hicks case, which was decided a couple of days ago. The federal attorney general no-billed the case, which means that they withdrew it from the court. Now, with regard to David Hicks published a book in Australia, his memoirs concerning Guantanamo Bay. Some 30,000 copies were sold. David Hicks was received for that and appearances and such a grand total of $10,200 Australian dollars, which was paid into a family trust away from him. Now, the Australian government has brought out a couple of there are areas of attack here. There's contempt of court, which wasn't quite able to stand. But there was another piece of legislation concerning proceeds of crime or making money out of your crimes. Now, there's a lot behind that concerning freedoms and such. Now, they challenged him and brought him into court concerning the proceeds of crime. They wanted the $10,200 back, which they froze, and they wanted to lock him up as well concerning what he had written. Now, when Hicks was picked up for $1,000 off the field in Afghanistan, I interviewed Terry. David's father a few years ago, and he also wasn't quite fully aware of what happened. My information concerning David came through an intelligence community, and David really shouldn't have been picked up at that time. He should have been identified as belonging to another grouping that I don't think David is even fully aware of to this day. David was taken to Guantanamo Bay or perhaps some other place, what he thought was Guantanamo Bay. He was kept there for a period from 2001 to 2007. Now, there was nothing to charge him with. They tried a case in the U.S. Supreme Court in 2004 overturned the existing legislation. The government over there rewrote some new legislation in 2006, charged David over there with assisting terrorism. And he was given a seven-year sentence, but the sentence was suspended. So David was brought to Australia. There's a lot behind all this, as you can imagine. I'm being very, very, very brief here. He served a nine-month sentence in Australia. Now, on the basis that he was found guilty in America and brought here to Australia for this nine-month sentence, then subsequently he had committed a crime, and therefore he was his memoirs were proceeds of a crime. Now, the problem was that in his what happened? There's a rule in law called the Orford plea. Now, the Orford plea is that in his particular circumstances, he pleaded guilty under duress because he was being tortured. Now, under the Orford plea, it can be argued that he didn't actually plead to. It's a different plea to one called nolle contendi. Now, the Orford plea was on the basis that he was under duress and being tortured, therefore he pleaded guilty. The things that he knew he was not guilty of, in order to be to terminate the matter. So he was brought to Australia and locked up. Now, if the court had proceeded to a hearing, his lawyers would have been able to bring forward evidence concerning the Orford plea, and also the fact that he'd been wrongfully jailed in the United States, and that of course would have reflected back on Australia. So that would have given David an opportunity to sue the Australian government for false imprisonment. So it's a highly complex issue there. Now, back to the AVN issue. If that goes to court, through the Supreme Court, depends which challenge they put forward, or through the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, then that would open up other areas. But certainly if the charitable status is being challenged as a result of a name change, then they should probably flow with that.
Well, hang on, just to clarify, this is a completely separate issue from the charitable status issue, and that has actually already been resolved. This is now just simply that the minister is demanding that let me read it to you again. The New South Wales Health Minister, Julian Skinner, and the Fair Trading Minister, Anthony Roberts, have been urged. The language here is very important, right? They've been urged. Well, so what? I mean, you could say, well, so what if they've been urged? That means nothing. But let's just read it. They've been urged to force the change on the New South Wales registered group. And this is just a change of name, nothing more. Not a change of status, nothing like that. Simply a change of name. Now, my question is, well, I could urge the minister to force people who eat chocolate cake to register on a chocolate cake register. But guess what? It's ridiculous. And you could say, well, people who eat chocolate cake might be injuring their health. Big deal. You know, it's like you can't do that. So my question about it is, who's doing the urging? Well, is it some doctors from the AMA? Well, we see one doctor being, you know, one person, Dr. Brian Owler. Dr. Brian Owler is the president of the AMA. Okay. But that's, again, his point of view. Now, I don't know whether the AMA acts as a political party. Do they vote on issues? Do they say, you know, the AMA as a group says this, or is that just his opinion? A president is just a title. It's just a role, and it's a rotating function. It doesn't mean like he is like the decision maker for the organization. So there are all these questions about it that are all legality questions. George, a very quick take on it, because we're going to break in just over 30 seconds.
All right. If it's just the name change alone, all these other complex matters, bring them in and definitely challenge. Go to court on it, definitely.
But what is the likelihood of... I mean, indeed, I would agree, but what is the actual substance? Is it not merely vexatious? I mean, does this have any chance? Can the government do this? Do they have any constitutional ability to do this?
They do, through regulatory authority. And
we are going to break, George. We'll continue that straight after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. And I am Herewood Fenton, and I'm very pleased to be your host today. We've been talking about this vexed subject of vaccines. We're in the grip of these global cartels that are controlling governments, that are preventing normal consumer behavior. You know, normally you would be able to make a choice about a product, like you could with any other product. If you think it's good, you'll buy it. Vaccines, of course, are meant to have inserts, and they all do, but you know, you're meant to be able to see that. You know, when you get a shot, by law, you're supposed to be shown the insert that came with that vaccine that tells you about all of the potential side effects and adverse effects. We'll be getting more into that in the next hour with Bronwyn Hancock. But in what remains of this hour, George, I want you to just run through. You've written a few interesting articles recently, one of them being the one on the history of tasers. If you could just run through some of the key bullet points of that, I think that would be extremely interesting.
All right. The taser was invented about 1969 by a NASA engineer named Jack Cover, who named it after his childhood comic book hero, a fellow called Tom Swift. So the acronym for that came out to be TASER, T-A-S-E-R. As all such products, it was put forward as one to save life, and the neuro-linguistic incapacitation technology behind it was new at the time. It was commercialized.
So you said 1969, right?
1969, yeah. It took a while to commercialize. There's a taser company floating about now. A lot came out. A lot of civil rights groups, freedom groups, protested. Even Amnesty International jumped on board, and seeing their activities in recent years, a bit of a surprise. And the United Nations Committee Against Terrorism commented that it was a weapon of torture, which I believe it is, at least. It has actually been proven to be a weapon of death, despite it being classified by certain governments as being a non-lethal weapon. It certainly is. I wrote on the site a number of incidents that took place concerning deaths due to taser, and that's hardly the top of the iceberg there. Now, it's a dangerous weapon. I don't know where we're going with this. Police forces are petitioning their political puppets at the moment to have a double-shot, stronger taser issued.
It's like a double vaccine.
It's like when you get
a cocktail vaccine.
Oh, I think it's
well,
it's
it is. It
done.
Is good for you. You
it's
see, the point here is
it's
very similar to the vaccine question, because the government bodies have looked into it and said it's safe. They've said it actually saves lives, just like vaccines do. It prevents death, and you know, the police are encouraged to administer the medicine whenever they deem it necessary. So, like, you know, when you go to the GP, maybe you're going for some other reason. The GP says, "Hey, I notice you haven't had your shot." Bang. It's the same with the police. If the police are asking you some questions and you don't want to answer, and they think, "Well, by the way, you know, you haven't had your shot," Sorry, it's a bad joke. But
no, that's okay.
But you know, like it is dispensed by the police in this manner. We've seen thousands of examples of it. The police have the guns right on the front of their chest, and they are encouraged to use it in anyone who appears to be needing it.
All right, there's one outstanding example, well, several, but one outstanding example there where a police officer was called to a home, couldn't get in, broke in, and she ran into the kitchen, allegedly shouted taser three times. There was a gentleman standing in the kitchen cooking his food. I'm sure he would have looked around. However, the gentleman was shot in the back by a taser, and the inquiry that followed, the officer said that she was confused because she carries too many weapons, and she had the taser. She used to walk around with the taser strapped to her wrist. Now, we've got another outstanding example. There were two inquiries in Australia where the evidence was not released, the conclusions were not released, where police fired at inflammables. A person was carrying a container of fuel. There were two examples of that. The evidence from that is not available. There was a young fellow brought out of his car, ordered to lay down on the road. He was tasered, remained paralysed, and was driven over by a vehicle. Now, the inquiry there said the police had not acted illegally in any way, and that was fine. We've had some extraordinary examples there on the in that particular article there. On the basis of approval, if I may just bring up another thought there, thalidomide, which was available from 1957 through to 1961. Now, thalidomide was developed by Grünthal, a German chemical company. There's an argument that three of the head chemists in there were from the Auschwitz camp and should have been placed in another position in their lives. For the last 2 years, it was well known through French, British, and also some Australian research that thalidomide was a dangerous chemical, pharmaceutical. Some 10 to 12,000 children in Australia suffered deformities as a result of that. 130 survivors are in court at the moment against the company in Germany. They've managed to get through Distillers Corporation, which was the distributor in Australia, through to the prime company. And the evidence has come out this week that material. There was sufficient evidence put forward to the manufacturer that this was causing child deformities. Yet for 2 years, with this evidence on the table, they sold the product. So the doctor, the GP, is very much reliant on what the government approves, and the government is reliant on what they're advised by their experts and what pharmaceutical companies present to them. So thalidomide, in many ways, is a very interesting example of the process of these pharmaceutical companies, the government experts, government, and the GP down in line. So
it's an interesting one in that we now know, and it was fully exposed and it's household knowledge, that thalidomide was a dangerous drug. But of course there are thousands of others that people don't know about. Every now and then one comes forward and we find out, oh, that one was bad. But of course we really are kept in the dark. We don't know about all of those thousands of pharmaceuticals out there that people are taking on a daily basis, what the potential problems are. And even when it does come out, now there's a drug called Tamiflu, which has had massive problems associated with it, which is still regularly dispensed here. It was completely banned in Japan. They had all kinds of bizarre effects from the drug. It's actually a psychoactive drug. Now, the drug is just given for flu. It's simply a flu drug. It's an antiviral medication, but it actually has an effect on the brain. So, and people are actually committing suicide as a result of taking this anti-flu drug. So the Japanese banned it. Look, it's what do we do, George? What are we going to do? I give up. I mean, I just feel like I've got to get myself to another planet or something, you know, preferably another country, but I may need another planet. How can I get out of the grip of this ridiculous tyranny?
Well, it's probably even worse. We know about fluoride. In our water, there are a couple of other interesting points that are coming out at the moment that I'll introduce here first on this radio program. One is the blue dye in M&Ms has been linked to some spinal disorders.
Can I just say, just hold it there. What I just want to point out is that I choose not to take any pharmaceuticals. I mean, I've really have avoided it for years now. I don't take aspirin. I don't take painkillers. I don't take anything. And you know what? I'm actually quite healthy. Like, I'm more healthy and I'm fitter, I believe, than most people of my own age. And I think it has a lot to do with my choice. So basically, my choice has been to simply avoid that. I also avoid sweets, lollies. I drink the odd Coke, which is probably a bad thing, you know, but less these days since I read about some new information that came out about some of the chemicals that are in Coke. You know, I used to think occasional Coke's okay. I don't drink beer out of the tap in pubs because there's a lot of chemical additives that they put into beer. I still drink a bit of wine. You know, I drink some spirits. But anyway, sorry, I do digress.
Anyway,
please continue.
On the issue of the high fructose corn syrup, it's interesting that I just remembered a gentleman named Rumsfeld was actually on the lobby group there and actually was able to bring us this this wonderful thing called high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, he's also a shareholder in the company that owns Tamiflu.
No doubt. And the other interesting point was, apart from the blue dye in the M&Ms, which is of concern, is that GM canola oil has been linked to macular degeneration in the eye. So that's a commonly used frying product in the major
chains.
Indeed,
yeah. Well, that's another thing I specifically avoid when I'm in the supermarket. Anything that's got canola oil in it, sorry, it's a no-no, I don't get it, because canola oil could have GM. We don't. Well, it is a GM product. So canola oil is one of the first GM crops ever actually invented. I don't use it. Thank you very much.
Governments have abrogated the responsibilities of health education welfare to their citizens. Citizens trust government, and I believe in that this has been abrogated in many ways by the public-private connection. And it's unfortunate. I think we saw this. Eisenhower warned about the military-industrial complex. This has gone even further than that.
George, we are just about at the end of the hour. It's been a great honour to have you on today.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be posting some of your articles. That one, we didn't really get into the depth of it there. The one about tasers is actually quite interesting. It's a very long and detailed article. I will be reposting that on Truth News and a number of other articles from your blogs as they pop up. Do stay tuned. We'll have Bronwyn Hancock directly after the break, and we'll be back into vaccines, and we're going to be looking at your rights. What are your rights as a citizen? Do you have to be vaccinated? Is there such thing as compulsory vaccination? Can you get your kids into childcare? Can you get your kids into school? All this and more on Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Do not go away.